Say big at Menards and keep cool in the summer heat with a new window air conditioner from Denali Air. Quickly and efficiently cool your spaces with auto and eco modes to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Featuring 3 fan cooling speeds and a remote control, allowing you to cool your space from anywhere in the room. Save big money on Denali Air. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. It's a delight to be back with you.
And so, physically back together.
And physically back together, yes. This is a rare event.
We're in each other's bubble.
We are.
No one's really adhering to bubbles anymore, are they?
I'm in a bubble.
I know you're in a bubble.
I think I live in a bubble all the time. A bubble of death.
Well, that's probably Dad.
I know, Betsy. What do you think of it so far? Terrible. Yes.
But no, I mean,
I don't think many people are adhering to bubbles, I agree.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like everyone's too bubble heavy.
No. Although it's very quiet. And it is in my bit of London. Sorry, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we? That in your bit.
Last week.
It's busy and.
Yeah. Different, I think, because I live out of town and you live in town.
Yeah.
But we don't know yet how long it will be until our beloved Joe Allen reopens.
No, we don't.
We haven't heard anything.
We haven't heard. You told me there was an Instagram message.
They put it on Instagram saying we're going to reopen soon, but still nothing.
No idea when soon is.
No. Maybe September. Mm. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't think I'll go back to the office before January.
I don't think you will either.
Yeah. So, time to invest in a new dining table because I use it as a desk and it wobbles.
Well, absolutely.
And
definitely.
I think it's an investment.
Oh, I do too. Some friends, I'm friends with the people in my bit of Bloomsbury who work for the Bedford Estate, and they've been given a timetable of working which involves a maximum of 2 days in the office a week. And there's a rota.
But that's what we would have to do, but it's just too complicated because there's so many of us and the space isn't big enough and the refit hasn't been done for the office downstairs, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think that all told there were 22 of them.
Yeah.
That's a lot, everyone. And they've got a big building.
Yeah, there's a lot more of us. Not a lot. There's like 40-something of us, I think.
But I don't see a lot of things like that happening till after the turn of the year.
Yeah.
I think we're all in.
Got to see what happens over the autumn as well, don't we?
Well, we have to see what happens, yes. I think, as I've said to you before, I mean, we did talk about it when we were remotely doing this, that we have learnt a lot of lessons.
Yeah, and we're learning a lot about the virus as well at the same time.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it won't be as violent and as dramatic as it was in March.
Yeah. Well, we're currently in local lockdowns, aren't we? So I guess that will.
Yeah, I think that will continue. I think the northwest of England and parts of west parts of Yorkshire are clearly, there's a spike, but still, I think there's a figure I read recently, perhaps even today, that, you know, it's still only 1 in 13,000.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, we're being cautious, I guess.
I think cautious is right. Sensible would be
definitely,
the right word.
Definitely right. Definitely.
Yeah. But you've always been encouraging me about that.
I did get quite cross with you at the beginning, didn't I?
Yeah.
I did actually send Jeffrey a case of wine. I said, you can have this if you stay at home.
If you stay at home. Well, funnily enough, I'm having some from those nice people. I'm having some delivered later this morning.
The advantage of me finding Jeffrey a home wine home delivery service, that I, without that, we all would have been in trouble because Jeffrey would have been on the street searching for the wine otherwise. But luckily, we set him up. And the best thing was, it made me laugh because at the beginning of lockdown, all of Jeffrey's friends were phoning him saying, Wine Society's not delivering. I can't get wine delivered. And I said, are you going to tell everyone about your wine services? No. Absolutely not. I'm not letting them all start using mice. And then I might not be able to get my wine. And that really, really made me laugh.
It's part of the history of lockdown.
Yeah. Well, luckily you were a bit blasé, and then you took it very seriously, so I was very happy.
Yeah. Well, when you remonstrate with me, Mo, I know I better do it.
Yeah. No, you do.
I know which side I should do.
Not messing around.
No.
Okay. Well, we have a new case today. This is a new one. I didn't know about this that you found out about.
Yeah, I came across this case for a variety of complex reasons. And it just struck me as being really dramatic.
It's got a lot of interesting elements.
And full of unexpected elements.
Now, what we're going to call it?
The murder of Seyma Khan.
The murder of Seyma Khan. Okay, so this is the murder of Seyma Khan.
Seyma Khan was Pakistani. She was born in Pakistan. And she had a younger sister called Saba. They were brought up, interestingly. They left Pakistan and went to Holland. And then eventually ended up in Luton in Bedfordshire. There's a big Pakistani community in Luton. Seyma had, as was the fashion, an arranged marriage. She was 18 and her bridegroom was a man called Hafiz Rehman. When the couple married, Seyma's younger sister Saba was 10. I think it would be fair to say that Seyma developed a teenage crush on her new brother-in-law, which became ever deeper. The two sisters were described by Seyma at one point as being extremely close. They were devoted sisters. But as Saba, the younger sister, grew older, so her jealousy for her elder sister deepened. Seyma went on, in fact, to have 4 children. They were living in a semi-detached house in Overton Road in Luton. That is her parents, the two sisters, they had a brother, Hafiz, and the 4 children. It was a multi-occupancy household. Saba's passion, and it's what it can only be called, her obsession with her brother-in-law, Hafiz, deepened. We're now in 2012. They're all cramped together. Hafiz is working as a taxi driver in Luton.
Who's living in the house then?
We can count them.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad.
Yeah.
The two sisters, their brother, Hafiz,
yeah.
And eventually 4 children.
4 children.
4 children.
So Seyma and Hafiz have 4 children.
Yes, Hafiz and Seyma have 4 Seyma. Children. They have a girl, 2 boys, and then a baby daughter. However, in 2012, Hafiz embarks on what will become a very dark passion indeed. He has a bit of a reputation for, how can one put it, being less than entirely faithful to Seyma. And being a taxi driver is known to have, how can one put it, adventures in the back of his taxi late at night. He also has something of an eye for the local sex workers.
He sounds grubby.
Well, let's put it this way. He wasn't wasn't pure as a driven snow, I don't think. Never mind. In 2012, he embarks on an affair with the younger sister.
Who is
Saba.
How old by this point?
24.
Okay.
Indeed, it's a deeply passionate affair. It begins when the elder sister, Saima, is pregnant with the second child.
I hate this guy.
Hafiz. I'm sorry, it sometimes takes even my breath away. Make sure to ask the local imam if he could be married to both sisters. And the local imam tells him, don't be silly, of course you can't.
They don't do that in...
No.
No religion approves that apart from one someone made up so they could do it.
What, Mormons?
Yeah.
The younger sister, Saba, gets pregnant. Well, that doesn't go down too well. And Hafiz is none too pleased. She isn't too pleased. And Saima, as far as we know, doesn't know anything about it. Saba aborts the child. But if anything, that only heightens her obsession with Hafiz. She decides, and here's where I think it does have incredible echoes of James M. Cain's dark novels.
Such as? If you don't know James
The
M.
Postman
Cain.
Always Rings Twice.
Mm-hmm.
Double Indemnity, made into a memorable film.
Mm-hmm.
Stories of Passion Gone Wrong. Saba decides that she wants her sister's life. She wants her sister's husband. She wants her sister's children. And she doesn't want her sister. Now, I've heard of sibling rivalry, but this is defies any description. Saba concocts a plan to remove her sister and take over her role. His wife, mother, the lot. Now, the plan comes to a head in May 2016. The affair between the younger sister and Hafiz has been going on for 4 years. But then Hafiz throws a stone into the pond and announces that he, Saima, and the four and their four children are leaving the house in Overton Road and setting up on their own.
Yeah, probably because he realises he needs to get out of it. He's in a sticky situation.
Yeah. I think he's tried to untangle himself from Saba on a number of occasions, but hasn't succeeded. So they announced that on the 25th of May 2016, they're going to be moving out, living on their own. And this ménage à trois is split up. There is the trigger for Saba to put her plan into operation. Both Saba and Saima have jobs. They work as carers. They go out looking after elderly people in their own homes,
mm-hmm.
Working for a company that offer social care. And on this particular night, Saba, the younger sister, is left at home babysitting the children while Hafiz, mum and dad, and the brother go to a funeral at the local mosque. Saba is very interested to know how long funerals last. She's got a great deal of experience of funerals. So she Googles it to discover it. They go on quite a long time. A few days before, she goes to Tesco and buys a large kitchen knife. There's some CCTV footage of her buying it. And on this particular night, the 23rd of May, 2016. She rings or text messages her sister, who's out caring, doing her job, at 11:07 that evening, and tells her to come home because the baby daughter is crying and needs to be fed. Essentially, what she's doing is luring her sister into a trap. Seema replies, "I'm on my way." At about 11:15 that night, the children, incidentally, are all asleep upstairs in bed. 7-year-old, 4, 2, and a baby girl. One, just one. Saba switches the lights off in the hall and the house and waits for her sister to put her key into the lock, the front door. Seema gets in through the front door, turns and clearly reaches for the light switch. She knows where. She never reaches the light switch. Saba stabs her, not just once, not just twice, not just 10 times, 68 times, many times after she was already dead. It's a killing ground.
Very frenzied.
And remember, this is a young Muslim woman. This is not, you know, a male serial killer. This is a young Muslim woman who's developed such an obsession with her brother-in-law that she releases this extraordinary frenzy of anger and rage directed at her sister.
I mean, I think that's a lot for anyone, irrespective of gender or religion or age.
Yes.
To do that with no, you know, nothing that they might have done before, or, you know, to come out of, well, not nowhere, because obviously that's the thing with crimes of passion, isn't it? They're just driven by something so powerful.
Primal.
Inside us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we all know what it's like to get worked up and in emotion over something, but not to take it anywhere near that far. And obviously it's her sister more as well. It's not, you know,
two souls in one body.
Yeah.
The attack lasts 8 minutes.
That's extraordinary. It's very violent. It's very hard to do that physically.
Very. Yeah. And at one point, the elder daughter wakes up and shouts downstairs, "What are you doing, Auntie? Are you killing a mouse?" Saba doesn't reply, but simply continues the attack. What the child doesn't know, of course, is that she's killing her mother. Oh, how could she? How would you even imagine it?
Mm.
Someone who's lived with you throughout your life, perfectly ordinary part of the family. It's a real domestic drama.
Yeah.
Even more significant, though, not only has Saba invited her sister back early, knowing that everyone is at the mosque, she then proceeds to stage a break-in. She goes to the kitchen door, back of the house, and breaks a window from the outside. It's one of those doors with two panes.
Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She breaks that from the outside so the glass comes inside.
Yeah.
And makes it look as though
someone's broken.
It's a home invasion. When the police arrive, there's some extraordinary body cam footage of this horrific scene. Well, Seema literally destroyed in the hallway of the house. Saba claims, she's not well organised here, but not very thoughtful. She takes off all her clothes and puts them in a black bin bag along with the murder weapon and puts it in her bedroom. She then calls her father at the mosque before dialing 999.
Bless her.
The police arrive to this carnage, a scene of absolute carnage, of savagery beyond imagination. And Saba claims that she was upstairs having a shower and never heard anything. But she also is sure to drop a little nugget into the first conversation with the police that she thought her sister was having an affair.
That's awful.
Well, at the start, the Luton Bedfordshire Constabulary cannot imagine that this is anything but a home invasion. I mean, this is clearly the work of a man. It's just too savage not to be.
Mm.
And for a time, in that bit of Luton, there's a real fear of someone who is prepared to not only to break in, but also to kill. The entire family decamp to friends in the community, including Sabah. And gradually, the police conduct a thorough search of the house. It takes them getting on for a week. A lot of people living in it, a lot of detail, until eventually they come across
the
black bin bag with the blood-stained clothes and the knife. I can only imagine that it must have been an extraordinary shock to the detectives, who would have found it very difficult to imagine that quite a slight, young Muslim woman would have been capable of this.
I think we can just say woman. It's just a surprise that anyone. I mean,
any
like
woman.
Me doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she's confronted by the police on about the killing, she says, "My sister and I were extraordinarily close."
Which everyone would vouch for, I guess.
And doesn't make a single other comment.
But they're like, "We've got the clothes and the knife here with your prints on," I would imagine.
Oh, yes, there's plenty of forensic evidence is pretty conclusive. But one of the things that sends a shiver down my spine is the husband, Hafiz, who says, in the wake of his wife's murder, she was a loving mother to four beautiful children, a devoted wife, a beloved daughter, and the most caring of sisters. Now, this is a man who has been having an affair with her sister for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's a downright bad, and we've established that from the get-go. I wonder if he... Did he ever say anything about... I suppose not. I wonder if he encouraged her. No, you don't think... It doesn't feel like it, that he had any knowledge that she would do it.
Let's put it this way. Until the police examine Sabah's mobile phone, they don't know anything about the affair with Hafiz.
Yeah.
And then they discover the WhatsApp messages.
Ah.
Which, of course, provides them with the one thing so far they've been lacking, a motive.
Motive.
Sabah makes no comment at all, except the police then go on to discover that she's been Googling on her laptop sites like 16 steps to kill someone and not get caught, and how to hire a killer, and poisonous snakes. They also discover that Sabah has paid £5,000, an astonishingly large amount of money for a young woman, to a Pakistani witch doctor to see that he should kill her sister. Only she instructs him, if it's going to be in a car accident, make sure the children aren't in the car with her. I mean, of course, the man doesn't
do
kill
anything.
Her sister. Absolutely ridiculous. Sabah forces the family through what can only be described as an absolutely brutal series of events. Doesn't say a word until the first day of her trial, on the 24th of October 2017 at the Old Bailey when she admits she killed her sister.
Interesting.
The judge pointed out in sentencing that she had invited, or as he put it, enticed her sister back to the house on that pretext of your baby's crying, and that the whole affair was clearly premeditated murder.
Well, that's definitely true.
She was given life with a minimum of 22 years. Life with a minimum of 22 years, and Saba, at that point, was 27. The thing that strikes me about this case, and the thing I find, in a way, the most extraordinary, is the damage it would have done to the family. We've talked about damage to victims' families, haven't we,
mm-hmm.
many times, but the damage must have been intense. Mm. Imagine the damage to the children. But there's not one public admission of shame or guilt by Hafiz. Certainly, Saba was wrong and murderous and certainly deserved a sentence, but...
He never should have got into it in the first place.
No, no. But if you think about domestic dramas, this is a domestic drama taken to extreme...
Yeah.
You know.
When you break it down, like, what's it really for? Like, so he can get his leg over, basically.
Yeah.
It's a bit pathetic.
Well, it's... history doesn't relate, at least I don't know, what's happened.
To him.
To him or the family.
Yeah.
I imagine the shock would have been very, very great.
You never get over that.
The trauma would have been just extraordinary. But what struck me about the case and why I thought we might do it, I've got another one, which I'd like to do quite soon too.
Okay.
Which is another domestic drama.
Wow.
It's not a serial, it's not a man who murders hundreds, it's one death.
Mm.
But it too, like this, has... a kind of dramatic potential. Mm. It's a case that we've talked about on a couple of occasions. Murder at the Villa Madeira.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, crimes of passion are so interesting, aren't they? Where someone's driven by something so elemental,
yes,
and emotional.
But
they do something that's completely out of character, really, and... It's almost like a psychotic break in yes. a way when your emotions take over so strongly.
Yes.
That you do something so final and violent.
And here is a young woman who embarks on an affair with her brother-in-law when she's 22 and carries a torch for him, there's no other word for it, for the next 4 years. Goes through with an abortion. I mean, no, I'm not saying I'm overly sympathetic, but it's a extraordinary story.
It is.
And in many ways, because it's so intense and it's so terrifying, you know.
And it is very unusual to have I think it's just having a young woman cause death in such a violent, frenzied fashion is very unusual.
Yes,
it is. It's very physically difficult to stab someone that many times. Like, it's very exhausting.
Imagine the incredible passion that was evoked. I mean, yeah. Just it takes your breath away.
Yeah,
literally
extraordinary.
Yeah, but I mean, sorry, it's not one I think that many people will have heard of, but I think I found it very moving, actually.
Yeah.
And in that sense, we talked about it often. I mean, this podcast called Blood Ties, and that there is something very important about relationships, and so I find crimes of passion very interesting.
Yeah, and I suppose if we actually break down everything that we talk about, there's always a connection in some way to relationships, or, you know, them triggering them, or past relationships causing effect and thing, and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Mm. Well, thank you, Dad. That was the murder of Samar Khan.
Yep.
There you go, a new one.
Let's talk about something cheerful.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
I don't know. I don't know what. I read a really interesting book. I think I talked about that already when we did our last podcast.
What's that?
That book I read about the Netsuki, the Japanese Netsuki, the hare with the amber eyes. I don't know if I did.
Talked about it, darling.
It was a really interesting book I read by a potter who had been given a collection of Netsuki, which are kind of little ornaments carved, Japanese ornaments carved out of ivory. You know, little animals or all sorts of tiny but really delicate tiny little ornaments. And he gets given and he inherits them, and then he goes back and to find where they came from, and then he tells the story of how they came into his family. And his family are really interesting, and they were Russian Jews who moved to Vienna and Paris, and, you know, and his uncle who got them first was like a patron of Manet and Degas, and then they're kind of given to this next set of his family, and they go through the war, and they're hidden under the bed by the, you know, it's all sorts of interesting things happening.
Well, that sounds good. I
enjoyed it.
I get so little time because I have to read all these.
Yeah, you don't get to read for pleasure, do you?
Really. Yeah. Some of it gives me great pleasure. I'm reading a wonderful book, American authoress, called We're All the Same in the Dark, set in small town Texas, which reminds me of a wonderful book by Jane Harper called The Dry, which is set in Australia. And again, perhaps it's like there are often themes that come out of our conversations, aren't there?
Mm.
This is about another obsession. You know, it's an old relationship which breaks up, and she becomes a policeman police officer, and he's still the loner. They can't know what happened to his sister, and it's very, very well, very well done.
Nice.
It's very exciting too, and it's one of those ones which is so delicately written. It's poetic. And it gives me great pleasure. So I do get to read wonderful books, but I don't get much of a chance to read.
You didn't steer out far from the crime and thrillers, though.
Not really, no. We always sit here, when we're together, we sit here looking at them.
There's a lot of them.
They rather accusingly look at me.
They are a lot of them, and they don't decrease.
No, they just keep on coming.
Keep on coming.
Yeah, still. I've been very lucky to be asked to do it for all these years.
Yeah.
Crikey. Another extraordinary element. Well.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you to all the people who help us out, to our producer, Poppy Damon, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to my brother Dan, who does our music, and my friend George, who drew our caricature, and to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work. And it's so appreciated. And to you, the listeners, without you we're nothing. Thank you.
Absolutely. Could not agree more, darling. Without the listeners, we would be nothing. And we are both so grateful and so appreciative of your messages, your support, your listening. It's absolutely heartwarming. And thank you all. And as I usually say at the end, do be careful out there.